Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The voices of Krypton podcast say they speak as superhero. That doesn't mean nothing to me. I've taken on James Bond, fought Batman. Yeah, okay, they won, but they wouldn't have. If only I had a little more cowbell.
I'm Ed Gross, and this is Voices from Krypton, the podcast where we speak superhero. And we also happen to be pretty fluent in sci-fi and action. Today we turn back to the Superman mythos, or more precisely, Superboys. And this Superboy is Connor, as played by Australian actor Joshua Orpin on HBO Max's Titans. This interview with Joshua was conducted towards the end of Season 2, but is being presented now as Season 3 unfolds. In it, he provides a look at his background and the journey that took him from Australia to playing the clone of both Superman and Lex Luthor, which, needless to say, provides some interesting internal conflicts. He also shares his feelings about the Superboy character and now being a permanent part of the Boy of Steel's history. So for you, I mean, I'd love to know what your journey was. I mean, in the sense of deciding to become an actor and ending up on Titans. I mean, what was sort of the in-between steps that I don't know?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it all started with theater. I kind of fell in love with theater at a young age. And I was in high school doing that. And then when I kind of finished high school, it's one of those things, like I knew in my heart of hearts that acting was something I wanted to do. And that was what I was happiest doing, but I didn't have the courage to kind of take that next step and actually try to be a professional yet. So I kind of bummed around a little bit, doing some other stuff, maybe trying to get a job that was going to be more responsible, you know, a real job, like financially stable.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, ultimately I was unhappy doing that. So it took me a couple of years before I decided, you know, I'm going to give this acting thing a shot. So I basically spent a year, you know, dropped out of university and spent a year doing a bunch of stuff for free. So I did three plays. I did like 9 or 10 short films. Okay. And a couple of independent feature films, all unpaid, just so that I could build up a resume of work that I could then show people. And once I did that, at the end of that year, I auditioned for drama schools. And my plan was that if I got into a drama school, great, I could go and study. If I didn't, then I'd just go and get an agent and just give it a crack. But I was lucky enough to get into an acting school in Western Australia.
Oh, great.
Called WAPA. Yeah, it's called WAPA, the Western Australian Academy of Performing Arts. And so the next 3 years I was there, I was studying. That was 2015 to 2017. And that was great. So they give you kind of the formal training kind of basis in theater with all, you know, your standard like practitioners, Stanislavskis and Meisner and all those people. And you get to do a bunch of plays. You get to do Shakespeare and Chekhov and all kinds of stuff. And then kind of on the way out, they throw you in front of a camera and they teach you a bit of film as well.
Oh, that's great.
And so I kind of came out of acting school in 2017. And then I was a professional auditioner for a little while.
Just, right.
Did many, many auditions. I did a little bit of work in theater. I did some Australian TV. And then I started to audition for a lot of US projects and TV in particular. So I actually auditioned for season one of Titans back when they were doing the first season, but that didn't go my way that time, but that's okay because season two came around and this came along, and yeah, here I am.
Now, who did you audition for in season one?
I'm not sure because with these things, they're very secretive and they send you out these scenes and they're fake scenes. So you're not you're never really sure who it is that you're auditioning for.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think with these characters, it's a good thing because you can have a preconceived idea of what you think the character is meant to be, and that can influence your audition. And they don't want to see that. They want to see who you are and what you bring to the character, and they just give you a kind of list of character traits and a brief description and get you to go off that. So I'm not entirely sure who it was. But I'm glad that I didn't get it because I'm very, very happy to be playing this role.
Absolutely. Before I ask you about this, you know, you said how you did short films, you did some theater, you did a lot of things you did for free, basically, just to build up your resume. I'm curious, mm-hmm. though, the experience you got doing those things, did it turn out to be beneficial when you did get into drama school? Or was it like, oh, everything I learned, I thought I knew, I didn't know, and now I have to start all over again when you get to drama school?
Yeah, well, yes and no, I think. It gave me a lot of confidence having those things under my belt.
Sure.
But having said that, yeah, I didn't really have a technique back then. I didn't really have I didn't have any tools. I was kind of just doing it on the fly and doing what felt good and seeing what worked and just having fun and playing around, basically.
Yeah.
So when I kind of came out of drama school, I felt like I was equipped with the tools to kind of to work professionally, which was really what I needed. And when I was in drama school, I had a lot of that confidence from having done a lot of stuff. But yeah, there was no real. I would say I was still very much a blank slate or a kind of I guess they would like to say. Just unequipped, just an unmolded piece of clay that they could kind of work with a little bit. Because I mean, it becomes more difficult, as you say, when you're a little bit older and maybe you've done some other classes and you have to unlearn things. I didn't really have to unlearn anything. I was kind of starting from scratch, which was good.
Absolutely. You know, so talk to me about this audition then. I mean, because like you said, you didn't know coming in who you were auditioning for and that sort of thing. So how did this other opportunity to audition for them come up?
Yeah, well, it was a self-tape. So I filmed the audition in my house in Australia.
Okay.
And emailed it in. So I got these scenes and they were fake scenes, I think, dummy sides, we call them. And there was just a description of the character. I knew it was for Titans, but one of the scenes was like, it was just, I think it was a teenage boy, and he was really angsty, and one of the scenes was he was having a fight with one of his friends in the locker room after a football game. And the other scene that I did was a scene where I was searching for my mother because I'd never met my mother, or she disappeared when I was young, and I thought I'd found her again, and then someone tells me that she's actually passed away, and then I kind of have to deal with that. So that was, there were contrasting scenes. One of them, I think, it's always a lot of guesswork. You're kind of sitting there thinking,
sure.
Oh, what are they looking for? What do they want to see? But then at the end of the day, you kind of just have to put that aside and just take the scenes for what they're worth and give your best interpretation of the actual character on the page. I'm grateful for that because if I had known, you know, straight off the bat that it was Superboy, I probably would have done things differently because I have an idea in my mind of what that character is, or at the time, at least I did. And
right.
Yeah. And I'm not sure that I would have got the part because maybe I would have let that influence me a little too much.
Sure, because you would have come in impersonating somebody else in person doing Superboy rather than you just being yourself.
Maybe a little bit, yeah. I doubt I would have done it the same way, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, you find out it's Superboy. So, I mean, I guess you audition, you get accepted, right? They hire you.
Well,
how's that work?
There was a little bit of time in between where I was waiting.
Okay.
And I'd sent the audition in, so that was done. I didn't have to audition again, which was crazy to me because I was sitting there thinking like, oh, should I do anything? And they're like, no, just wait. And I was like, okay. And yeah, they told me it was Superboy. And then I kind of reacted to that. I'm like, well, surely now that I know it's Superboy, I should come and audition for you guys again. And it was like, no, we're happy with the first one. And so I was kind of just sitting at home, twiddling my thumbs, just waiting it out. And then, two or three weeks go by and then they tell me I get the part. And then, yeah, it all kind of started. But
for you, what was your reaction? I mean, to the idea, and did you have much knowledge of Superboy or Superman or?
Yeah, well, I was a huge fan of the genre already. And I love superheroes and Superman in particular, I was actually a big fan of. Probably, it's funny you're interviewing Carl Kessel for this piece because one of my favorite comic book arcs ever is The Death of Superman. And that was, and that was where I knew the character of Superboy from. That was kind of the version with which I was most familiar.
Right.
And I had the DC encyclopedia sitting on my shelf. So I just went straight to that. There's like a double page spread on Superboy, opened that up.
Yeah, had a look. Very cool.
And I it felt incredibly surreal and exciting. But I immediately just kind of went straight to the source material. So I kind of went to the local comic book stores and bought all of the comics and started to read those. But yeah, I was familiar with the 1990s version. I knew of the others. I knew of the Jeff Johns and the even the Young Justice version. I was kind of familiar with that because that was on TV at the time.
Right.
But yeah, no, it's safe to say I was a big fan, and I could appreciate the weight of this decision to cast me in this role. Right. I did endeavor to kind of give myself a more well-rounded perspective by looking at all the different versions of the character that have kind of come and gone in the past.
Been a lot of them.
I looked at there's a few different iterations. So I thought I would look at them all. So I was most familiar with the 90s, but I also read a lot of the Jeff Johns. That was a huge focus because he is involved in our show.
Yes.
And his stuff from the early 2000s with the Titans and Superboy. And also at the new 52 and even the new kind of the newer interpretations of the character. But yeah, no, it's definitely safe to say that I was a fan.
Is there more?
The voices you're hearing are the voices from Krypton.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Is this what you were looking for?
Yeah. No.
And I wonder, though, when you obviously now you've done all this research, you've gotten an idea. I mean, you knew who Superboy was, but you've done all this research, gotten a sense of all the other iterations. Then, of course, the Superboy they write in the script is going to be different than the Superboy, at least to some degree, than you've probably read in the comics. So I'd love to get a sense from you of sort of the take on this, sort of how you view this guy as a character, first of all.
Initially, when I spoke to Greg Walker, the showrunner, he told me that the version of Superboy we were doing is going to be largely based on the Geoff Johns iteration of the character.
Right.
At the very least visually. So we have that look, that classic look of the, you know, the blue jeans, the black t-shirt with the S symbol on it in red. And he told me that it was going to be the version of the character that was, he was the genetic clone of Superman, but half of his DNA was actually from Lex Luthor as well.
Right.
So I knew that much going in. So it's kind of like, okay. And then when I got the script, it was another kind of revelation entirely, because the writer, Rich Haddam, he had kind of created this entirely new take on the character that I hadn't encountered before in any other medium, which I thought was fantastic. That was hugely, hugely exciting, because I kind of read that and I was like, oh, wow, okay, so this is going to be... I knew kind of what he was going for and that I could do something with it that was going to be fresh and original and unique across all the mediums of the characters existed previously. So I knew that it was going to be different to any of the comics. And I, from what I knew of the Young Justice version, I knew it was going to be different to that as well. So I was grateful for that. And yeah, it is definitely new. You haven't had a chance to watch it, have you?
I've watched, I believe, the first 10 episodes of the season.
Oh, of season two?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah. So you would know he is a little different. We kind of really focused on the childlike aspects of Connor, and he's he has this innocence to him and this naivety that we haven't really seen before. And we played with the idea of giving him epigenetic memories as well. So he kind of has these memories coming into his brain, memories of Superman's past, memories of Lex Luthor's past. And other than those things, he's operating almost exclusively on off of his instincts and off of the basic emotions that a toddler might be feeling, because he's new to the world. So just, you know, the purest kind of forms of joy and rage and curiosity and wonder and fear. And yeah, that was something that I hadn't really seen in the comics, which is, I mean, maybe it's there, but in something that I haven't read, but I hadn't really come across that before. So I thought that was hugely interesting and a really kind of great new take on the character.
I also like the fact that what I've seen of him is like, you know, you captured, there's a scene I remember specifically of you and he and Gar walking down the street before the police get involved and everything. And there's that innocence you talked about. But when the threat comes in, it's very interesting how your whole demeanor changes. And suddenly, like, this sort of innocent becomes this guy that you just don't want to screw around with because you know he's going to kick your ass.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. Yeah, well, transformation.
That was another element to him that that I thought was crucial, was that he has the Lex Luthor temper, and he has that childlike ability to have tantrums and to completely give in to his rage. And in that moment that you're talking about, he goes into that situation thinking one thing and thinking that he's gonna do what Gar's told him to do and be a hero and help people. And then he starts getting shot at by the police.
Right.
And that kind of triggers a memory from a previous episode of him getting shot at by Cadmus people. And long story short, he kind of, it's almost like a rage blackout kind of thing where he just, it's just like something switches over and he gives in to that Lex Luthor side and really there's no filter. So he can go back and forth and really get lost in those different emotions. And he doesn't have any way to regulate that or moderate that yet, because he hasn't been alive long enough.
Yeah, absolutely. By the end of the season, I'm not asking for plot spoilers per se. What I am wondering, though, is does he go through any sort of further evolution? It's only a couple of episodes away anyway. But is he going through, or is the season end with him still being sort of naive / I'll kick your ass? So,
yeah, he definitely does. I found the... reading the entire arc of the character over the season, I found it incredibly satisfying as an actor, because you can see he definitely goes from point A to point B and he grows and learns. throughout the story. And he definitely, the way he ends up is not where he begins, which is always, always a great thing to read as an actor going in. But even between episodes 6 and 10, because I'm introduced in 6 and then up to 10, which you've seen, he kind of even in those, in that amount of time, goes from naive, mainly driven by curiosity, to he kind of starts to develop opinions. And by episode 10, he's kind of telling Gar, maybe people shouldn't rely on us to save them. And and he's kind of almost becoming that little bit indignant kind of toddler thing where, yeah, he's a little bit argumentative and he's not asking questions anymore, because the first few episodes, it's question after question after question. And now he's developing his own opinions based on his experiences. So even in that short amount of time, he does develop a little bit. But in answer to your question, yes, by the end of the season, and particularly in the finale, there's he kind of goes through, without giving anything away, he goes through quite an intense, I guess you could say, transformation or trial. He's really tested, is what I'm saying. And as a result of that, he has to learn to take responsibility for his actions. And I think you'll find that he does learn a thing or two by the end. And the opportunities going forward for the character kind of open up as a result. And that was very exciting to see.
What is it like, though, for you to be walking around wearing a black T-shirt with a red S on it and knowing that you're playing a variation of the Superman character? What is that just like, doing that?
It's both exhilarating and terrifying. Because on the one hand, you have this surreal experience of living your childhood fantasy of being a superhero, which many, many little kids kind of make believe and pretend to be when they're little, including me. So it's that feeling of playing pretend, but for real. So it's like surreal. But on the other hand, there is the crushing weight of the responsibility of playing a character that so many people are already invested in, and they have expectations of you, and they have an idea in their mind of what that character should be. And should you not live up to that, you know, you don't want to think about that. So ultimately, none of that is conducive to creativity. So in the end, you have to let it all go and really just take what's on the page and make it your own. But the actual feeling of walking around in the T-shirt, it's pretty cool. There's nothing quite like it. I've never really had that feeling in any other character that I've played. It's iconic. And it's just exhilarating. You feel special.
It feels super.
Exactly. Yeah, for want of another word, you feel super. It's tough to describe, really.
Yeah.
I definitely appreciated that feeling.
Oh, sure. I can imagine that. And it's so funny too, because on the one hand, you could look at people and say, you know, I'm not actually playing Superman. I'm playing this clone. But I think anybody who looks at you is going to say, oh, he's playing Superman.
Yeah, there was one day when we were getting ready to shoot a scene. We had a little bit of time. And me and a couple of the other casts just went for a walk just to check some stuff out around the area that we were filming. And I wasn't in costume. My hair was done. But apart from that, I was in regular clothes. And some random lady that we ran into just told me out of the blue that I look like Superman. And I was like, oh, wow, okay.
That's funny.
Which was kind of cool. I was like, oh, wow. But yeah, people do assume. There were a lot of like confused. I mean, it's tough to say when you're filming out in public whether people actually know what they're looking at, or whether they just see a film crew and they just think, oh, they're filming something, and start taking pictures.
Right.
Or how many of them actually saw the S. And because I was trying to hide it a lot of the time, just because I didn't want to give away the costume. It ended up leaking anyway. But yeah, that was a funny moment. Told me that I looked like Superman. I was like, okay.
It's so funny. There are certain, like, I went to the set of the movie Legends starring Henry Cavill. And the funny thing is, it was being a bunch of reporters, we were interviewing Henry. Henry's all buffed up. His hair is curly and black. And he just happened to have a black lock of hair, like, curled over. And I'm looking at this guy, and and he wasn't cast as Superman yet, but I'm looking at him saying, oh my God, it's Superman. I mean, he looks like Superman. And sure enough, 2 years later, he was Superman. So it's amazing how there's a certain look, though, that people, it's kind of what you were just saying. You just look at certain people and it's like, wow, he's got that look.
I'm sure that didn't hurt when I sent my audition in, that maybe I'm predisposed to have to look like the character a little bit.
Yeah.
But I get what you're saying. My hair does this thing as well where the front of it kind of curls across my forehead.
Right.
Involuntarily, it just kind of happens. And they kept trying to, even on the first episode, the director was like, no. Curl it, put it back, like brush it back. It looks too much like Superman. He's not Superman, he's Superboy.
That's right.
I'm like, oh, okay. And then there was a moment in episode 13 where we kind of changed the look of the character a little bit. And I was kind of like, that director had moved on since then. We had a new director and I was kind of like, okay, maybe I can have a little bit of license here. And I was like, maybe this is the moment where we can have a little bit more of that Superman influence. So we actually had the curl deliberately kind of coming across my forehead like that to kind of show that for that moment, he was a little bit more, or at least he was meant to look a little bit more like the classic Superman.
Yeah, that's great. I can't
wait to see. Which is kind of cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because, you know, and this is the other thing. I mean, you're talking about like the weight of all this, of playing this character and stuff. What's kind of cool is, like, an actor who plays James Bond, you may play, like, there's an actor named George Lazenby played James Bond one time, but
yeah.
George Lazenby is a part of Bond history now and always will be for all time that's, you know, a James Bond. You're now entering this sort of legacy of Superman, this 80-year legacy, and from now on, you will always be, no, not saying typecast, but I mean you, part of you will always be known as a part of this legacy. And that's got to be pretty amazing.
I hope so. I hope you're right. And it is a privilege to be a part of that.
Yeah.
And I like to think that as a fan of these characters and in all the media, the movies, the books, everything, that I can be a part of this kind of world. And I wouldn't mind that at all. If people, you know, if I'm still going 10, 20, however many years from now, and people still remember me for this role, I'm going to be happy about that. I'm going to be grateful that I left an impression. And I mean, there is the James Bond parallel. That's a good one. But I more think of it as like this, these characters being like Shakespearean characters in that so many people have played them before you and so many will after you. And your goal as an actor should be just to really make it as truthful to you as you can when you get the chance to play one of these roles, and hopefully it leaves an impression.
You can check out the continuing evolution of both Superboy and Joshua by streaming Titans on HBO Max. But before you do that, please subscribe to this podcast, tell your friends about us, and give us a 5-star review. We'd love to hear what you think. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next time.